Stay thirsty, my friends.
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
Touchdown, Packers!
Football is alive!
Lana!
What? Danger zone.
Was gonna be this way.
No! No! No!
Psych you out in the end.
This is the way.
It's Morphin' Time!
Jolly Joker Fish.
Ew, David.
And be better protected from mayhem. Like me.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Nerd!
Welcome one and welcome all to another episode of the Nerdiest Podcast in the Midwest. An episode where we're sticking into the TV realm of the Midwestern Nerds Podcast, TV Talk Edition. I am your host, Brian Stoffel, joined as always by my partner in crime, my sidekick, my podcast co-host,
K.O. Kyle Olson. And we're recording on St. Patrick's Day, so happy St. Patrick's Day to all my fellow Irishmen out there.
On the top of the morning to y'all. We are the Midwestern Nerds. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwestern Nerds. We are the Midwestern Nerds Podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to MidwesternNerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream and listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. This week, we promised you a 100th episode extravaganza. We're going to be postponing that to next week because there are a couple of key big episodes and series that we need to talk about this week. That being The Land of Pedro Pascal, The Last of Us, and The Mandalorian. We've talked a little bit about The Last of Us in the past in a couple episodes. We haven't really deep dived into any of the series, but we are going to do that this week. And Mandalorian keeps trugging along. We are three episodes in as of recording this episode. So we're going to be talking about episode three. We're going to give you some great best stuffs to end the week, and then we're going to wrap things up. So first, let's start with The Last of Us. I feel like that's going to be a big chunk of this episode. Kyle, I know you were late to the bandwagon to the point where I stopped mentioning it on this podcast and you didn't remember that I was even watching it and keeping up with everybody else. Let's start with your thoughts. Overall thoughts, feelings, opinions on The Last of Us series as a whole.
Oh my God, this was phenomenal, which I'm not surprised about because the game is phenomenal and the game is phenomenal for different reasons. The story itself is good and it's also a really fun zombie shoot 'em, right? So you put those two together, it makes for a very fun video game. But you take the story out of that, right? And HBO Max did a phenomenal job of being very true to the story while just enhancing it. And that's all they did. They changed a few things here and there, but overall, they just took the story and ran with it and told it in a different way, but still telling the same story. Just phenomenal. I mean, Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey, phenomenal. There's no other word for it. They just did so good at portraying these characters, right? And I can't say enough good things in general. I mean, there's specific episodes that I'm going to rewatch just on their own. Like episode three, I could watch that every single day for like 2 weeks and not get sick of it. And it has almost nothing to do with the normal, with the just overarching story. But it's just incredible what they were able to do in only 10 episodes. They were able to tell about, it's like a 10-hour game if you play depending on play style. So they did it about right. With a lot less zombies. Like a lot of people were going into the show like, oh, I don't really like zombie stuff, you know, but me either. I've never seen The Walking Dead, never saw World War Z or anything like that. Like I'm not a zombie guy, but this isn't really a zombie show. They're infected, right? But there's like what? Maybe there's the herd of zombies and then they run into like four maybe infected people. It's great. It's just, it's about people and it's about love, and it's about the different sides of love, and it's just relationships, and everyone has a perspective. Whether your perspective is right or wrong, that's up to you. Like, it's just so good. I feel like I could just go on and on without talking specifics. But now I do want to hear your thoughts, because for some reason, you're right. I absolutely forgot that you were watching it.
We're going to get into some specifics after I give my general thoughts. So with that, as always, if you're a regular Midwestern Nerds listener, you should just come to expect spoilers all the time. We sometimes talk non-spoiler stuff, but it's just not as fun. And since we're usually playing catch up anyway, by the time we get around to talking about it, you should have watched it by now. So for new listeners out there, this is a pretty common norm of Midwestern Nerds just going in full spoilers right away. But before that, general thoughts on this show. I love how different this show is. I mean, you can really look at the premise and the idea and the story of this show, and you could probably be like, okay, I bet like this, that, and the other thing is going to happen in this. And they might touch on that sometimes, but for the most part, it's like a whole fresh new look on this genre. Like you said, it's a zombie show with not a whole lot of zombies, which I found very refreshing. And I've watched quite a bit of zombie stuff as far as like movies and TV and The Walking Dead and all that. And it's a genre that can feel very limiting, and it's a genre that you can see the same tropes played over and over and over, just with different characters and maybe slightly different scenarios. And this doesn't always feel like a zombie show. It feels like a post-apocalyptic end of the world, but not like Mad Max style end of the world. It's very much like a realistic take. And then when you get the zombies, it's unlike The Walking Dead, it's actually terrifying. Does The Walking Dead have like some kind of jump scares every once in a while? Sure. But never have I felt the intense anxiety that I have when this show brings in the zombies, whether it's one or whether it's like a horde of them coming out of a sinkhole. I love just looking at how the world would be in a situation like this. If it was like, if there was like an apocalyptic event that happened and we kind of jump ahead 20 years later, I felt like this was a very realistic take on how the world would be. You know, there are some people that are, you know, trying to have some structure, trying to kind of bring some balance to the world that they're in now. And then you have those people that are under them, like the normal people in the situation, that are like, you're just as bad as what we had before, if not worse. And we always feel like we can do better. And seeing the decisions that are made in this show, I also love that too, that it's not always, choices that are made in the show aren't always choices that you see made in other stories. And you really see the rewards and the consequences that can come out of these decisions as well. Instead of like any other show would be like, well, we made this decision and it's going to suck for a little bit, but eventually they'll find their way out of it, or we'll write out the consequences that they should have had, or we'll make it so that, you know, our heroes can have like a decent journey. Like they can have a struggle, but ultimately they're going to be okay in the end. Where this show is like, we're going to do some shit, and you might not like it, but sometimes it's just how life is, where shitty things happen and shitty things continue to happen. And we don't always make the best decisions in those situations. And this is what would happen, and this is the outlook that you would get in a situation like that. I love the acting, all the actors that they had in the show. And I found it really cool that we brought in a lot of like the key voice actors and mocap actors from the video game to play smaller but still significant roles in this first series. And I also loved afterwards, like if you stick through the credits and you get the little teaser of next week, and then you keep watching and you get the behind the scenes of that episode. You get the creators of the show, the showrunners, the show, like not only the creator of the video game, but also one of the co-showrunners, talking about the themes and elements that are going on in these episodes and their interpretations and their thoughts and opinions on it. And then you get a lot of the key actors in those episodes expressing their feelings as well. Even just like not just story beats, but you get like some technical stuff, some behind the scenes stuff, things that while I find them to be very interesting as like a special feature in a movie, 9 times out of 10, I'm not going into the special features menu and watching all those behind the scenes videos as much as I'd like to. But to have like a 2 to 5 minute like segment, like just tacked on after the credits of an episode, I wish more shows would do that.
My final like general thought before we start getting into specifics here. I love in the second episode, this isn't really spoilers, but whatever. If you haven't watched the show, then you should have stopped listening a while ago. In the second episode, there's the, like, we get clickers and we get some pretty big action in that episode, right? Like right away, second episode. For the rest of the show, I'm expecting in certain scenes clickers or walkers or fucking what I can't remember the big fucker's name too. Like they built the bloater. Yeah. They built in that suspense so early on that it lasted through all 10 episodes, where there's just scenes where I'm specifically waiting for infected to show up. And it was just, it's so phenomenal of establishing the threat, but not overusing the threat at all. Like, it's just so well done, because the longer it goes on too, it's like, okay, they haven't showed a fucking infected in a while. We're going to get an attack here, but they never come. Like, it's just, but then they do come something like, yeah, it's just such a well done show without overdoing the what did you call it? The
tropes.
Yes, exactly. Without overdoing the tropes in the genre that they're doing.
And I like too how the show takes what The Walking Dead does really good in showing that sometimes humans can be a lot more dangerous and a lot scarier than the zombies and the undead. But this show takes that concept and that idea and does it even better. The fact that, jumping into spoilers now, in episode 8, when we get Daniel and his people, and showing that, like, oh yeah, you can maybe have some good people, and then you can have, like, this dude that's pretending to be a priest, but really he's kind of bringing up his own cult. On top of that, there are a bunch of cannibals, and on top of that, he's a pedophile and a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just go so dark and so dirty right away.
Just, yeah, incredible. Oh, you mentioned the voice actors and the mocap from the video games. There was one person who played themselves from the video game, and that's Marlene. Same person in game and show, and I thought that was super cool, at least to have that. But you got the Joel actor, you got the Ellie actor actually doing her being her mom, which if you watch the behind the scenes of that last episode too, is like very cool for her to be the mother of both the video game character and the actual show, like just in different ways. I thought that was so cool. She's I can't remember her name now, but she's awesome. She's from Critical Role. She's, you know, voice actor playing D&D. She's just awesome. Just a wonderful human being.
Not only that, she was also a huge actor back in the day for the show Family Ties.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for us nerds over here on the Midwestern Nerds podcast, I noticed, and you all might have noticed too, She plays a very small, almost like background appearance role in the first Avengers movie.
Yes!
She's the waitress in the diner. She has like a bigger part in like a deleted scene with mm-hmm. Cap. And I think Stanley might be in that scene too. But you've definitely seen her face if you watch the Avengers movie. So it's really cool. Right. It's really cool to see her in this show. And like you said, it's cool that she was Ellie in the video games and they made her Ellie's mom in the show, which that scene too, I was like, oh damn, we're going so dark.
Holy shit.
I don't know. There's not a whole lot more that I have to talk about the show other than the fact that it's so good. You should definitely watch it. They announced earlier this week that they are going to be releasing this season physically on Blu-ray this summer. So that's got me a little bit excited as a physical media collector. I guess the only other thing that I want to ask and talk about is the last episode.
I figured.
I haven't played the games. And I don't know if I'm going to play the games until this show is done, just because this is one of those rare things where usually I love to like watch and play and read previous material that something might be based on and then compare and contrast as like after it comes out. This is one of those rare things where I didn't play the games first. And just going episode to episode was fun to keep that suspense going and to hear non-spoilery chatter from people who have played the games being like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next week. I wonder if they're going to do, I wonder if they're going to tap into this thing that happened in the game. And it's like, oh, I don't know. Unfortunately, though, I have a little bit of stuff that was spoiled for me that happens in game two. Just because of, you know, the internet being the shitty internet, and I've got a couple of really irritating coworkers that just decided one day to be like, hey, I haven't played the game. Oh, then you don't know that this happens to this person. And I'm like, fuck you.
Are you shitting me? Oh, no, I know what you're talking about.
That happened. But I will say this. It is encouraging, though, knowing all of these things from the game that unfortunately I know. It's encouraging to hear the showrunners say that they're going to be splitting up the second game into multiple seasons. And they are the most excited about the significant changes they're going to be making from the games in season two and season three. So when you tack that little bit of knowledge on, it's like, okay, some of these things that I've heard happen could still happen, but they might not happen as soon as everybody thinks. And they may not happen in the same way or fashion, which is encouraging for me because, like I said, I've learned some key things that I didn't want to know. And I've been curious to know how they're going to do it in season two. And hearing that, it's like, oh, maybe it's not going to happen right away. Maybe some of these bad things that I've heard might get postponed a little bit. We might get a little bit more time with the good things before we go into the really bad things. I'm trying to be as vague as possible because I don't want to ruin it for anybody else. But last episode, we're going full spoilers here. You've had a week to watch it. If you haven't watched it, pause this, watch that episode, come back here, and continue on with this conversation with us. So, Kyle, the events that happened in the last episode, for me, I was like, this is interesting because I get where Joel's coming from. I don't agree with it, but I can like understand and empathize with it. And it's very interesting that they ended it where they ended it.
All right, Brian, let's do this. Okay, I am absolutely on Joel's side. I will say that right out the gate. And I wasn't right away. I think while I was watching it in the moment, I was very much in your side. I was like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on? Joel, what are you doing? Stop. Like, slow down for a sec. But then I slowed down for a sec. And you start to think about it, right? Obviously, there's the relationship, right? They've built this unbreakable bond. He's basically replaced, not replaced, actually. That's a terrible way to put it. He has now substituted Ellie for Sarah. Kind of in, you know, he has finally kind of moved on from Sarah, and now he has Ellie in his life as the daughter figure. He calls her baby girl, I think, at the end of episode 9. Or 8 or whatever it is. So there's that emotional, you know, of course he's going to go after her. Like, that was the whole thing in my head when they were going to walk him out, you know. But then about it, again, we're diving straight into spoilers here. The reason she's immune is because the cordyceps from birth grew in her but didn't take over anything, right? There's cordyceps in her that never took over, and it's like up in the brain. So that's why when she got bit, the cordyceps in her arm did not take over, because there was communication between the two that this isn't, like, it's already, I don't know, I guess that's kind of how it explained, or maybe I'm not explaining it correctly, but there's communication between those two cordyceps, the cordyceps in her brain and the cordyceps that from the bite that basically stopped the infection, and she does not get taken over into a zombie.
It was a very like technical way of saying that, correct, like, she's immune, and the reason she's immune is things that are up in her brain.
But the reason that she's like that is because her mom got bit while she was being born. So who's to say, if they go into her brain, killing her, that's the whole reason he stops this, right? This surgery is going to kill her. Who's to say that they take what they think are physical cordyceps in her brain, they think that they can just take it out and make a vaccine for everyone and put it out there and give it to everyone, and it's going to work, right? That's a big risk. Now, yes, the reward is we don't have to worry about this. However, you don't have to worry about infection, right? But you still have to worry about these fucking infected ripping you to pieces. Joel established that, I believe, in episode 3, when he was like, you may not be able to be infected, but these things can still rip you apart. You can still die. They still established that Ellie can die from these things, just not be infected. So again, we don't know if it's going to work. You can still die from this. The ongoing crisis that they're fighting is still going to be going for a very long time. Not to mention, how is this going to be, like, distributed? The vaccine, how would this even work? Is it going to be a paid thing? Is everyone going to get some for free? Ephedra is obviously going to get involved at some point. They're probably going to monetize it. Like, there's no clean plan of action if they get this to work. So, like, there's so many questions around the quote-unquote vaccine that Joel is just like, no, fuck it. What do you mean? We're not risking this girl's, we're not killing her just so that we can maybe have a way to fix this. We need to do more research. There's got to be a way to do more. And that's why I'm on his side, because there is someone in his life who he loves unconditionally that he needs to go save, because they may be sacrificing her life for no fucking reason. Now, yes, there's the question of, if she knew, would she still make that decision? That's the fun of the episode. We don't know what decision she would make. She has said in the past that she, you know, whatever it takes, you know, this doesn't stop until we reach the finish line. That, you know, she's alluded to that. But if she knew that she was dying from this procedure, would she sign up for it? She fell asleep. Like, she didn't, I feel like she got knocked out and then they just immediately put her out. Like, she didn't know anything when she woke up in the back of that car. I just feel like there's so many unanswered questions and there's so much doubt around everything that I am fully on Joel's side about this, that he was able to make that snap decision and just be like, no, you know what? This isn't worth it right now. And do what he was able to do, which, oh my God, was dark and cinematically was fucking awesome. And yeah, that last episode was just cool. But I am absolutely on Joel's side.
It all comes back to what I said before about this show focusing on decisions that were either made or not made and dealing with the consequences of those decisions. And I think it's interesting that the way that it played out was probably the worst possible way that that could have played out. If people on both sides would have like taken a second to like calm down, breathe, and communicate, this could have went completely different. I think it would have been different if, like you said, if Ellie would have known all the facts, what her decision would have been at that point, if all of them would have been conscious and a part of that conversation, like if Ellie would have been conscious in there, if Joel and Marlene would have all been there as part of that conversation, if Ellie would have decided, you know what, I'm going to die, but this is for the better, like we're still going to do it, and she made that decision and Joel was there, if he would have then done what he did, he would have been the big asshole, and then that would have been like, he would have been the bad guy in that situation. But if you would have like respected her wishes, maybe you could have had a cure for the world. Especially if Marlene then would have given Joel the opportunity to say goodbye too. Because that was the other thing. It's like, we're going to have to kill her and you're just going to have to leave. Like, you're going to have no part of it. Like, you're not going to see her. You're not going to be able to. I think that was like the big trigger for him of like, no, this is my new daughter. And not only are you going to kill her for the better of the world, but then you're not even going to like let me like get my peace with that either. You're just going to chew me away.
which is so perfect too, because in the first episode, whatever, when they initially take on Ellie to go on this quest, he says, if we don't get our car battery, we're killing the girl. And like, that's the last thing Marlene knows about Joel. So now she's waking him up and she's like, hey, we have her. We have a car for you. You can go. Like, that's what she thinks Joel wants. She doesn't know about this epic journey that they've just been on. Oh my God. That's honestly so, the more I think about this show, the more you can tell that they paid attention to all these details.
And so because of the way that it went, I'm on his side up until like the last minute of the episode. And that's kind of where I feel like too, especially the things that I know now about the second game and about where this story's going to go. I feel like I'm going to be quickly watching this show when it comes out brand new by myself. Because currently I've been watching it with my girlfriend and she's been on board with it. And she was like, I liked that episode, but I don't like what Joel did because I don't like that he lied. Because their whole thing is like, hey, we've built up all of this trust throughout this whole journey. Like, we've never lied to each other. We've always been open. We've always been honest. And the fact that he could, like, fully, without a thought, just be like, nope, I'm gonna lie to your face, and I'm gonna do it so well. I've got this story that I didn't even probably think of, but it's just coming at the top of my head. And when she asks him, that last minute of, be honest with me, is that really what happened? And he's like, yep. And she hesitates for a moment. And you know that she knows that he's lying. But she's still like, okay. That's where the tension, I think, is going to start right away in season two.
I think you're wrong. Okay. Sorry. I'm just going through so many emotions rethinking this. Okay. First of all, I think he did think this through. While she's knocked out, he's in the car, right? I think by the time she wakes up, he already has his whole story planned out. I feel like he answers way too quickly to be making that up on the spot. He had those answers. He had his story planned out, right?
I think it was half-baked because, sure. Because I was when he starts to lie, I'm like, okay, that's believable. But then when he's like, oh yeah, and then Raiders came at the last minute and took everybody out, then it was like, that's where I start to question that lie.
But again, believable, right? Or maybe like you're saying, maybe it's half believable. Maybe that's where the distrust starts to begin with Ellie. However, we'll get to that in a sec. Joel has to lie to her, okay? Listen, I know that there's this trust built in the relationship, but it's a trust based on a parental relationship. And sometimes the parent has to just lie to the kid, and it's for the kid's own good. If, yes, Joel is protecting the fact that he just fucking murdered all these fireflies, right? But I think he's also protecting Ellie from the truth at that point of they were going to kill you. This wasn't like, and they didn't even tell you that. They didn't give you an option, right? Yes, I know you want this cure, and I know you want to save the world, but it might not have been the way that you were thinking it was going to be, right? Because she's this whole time been talking about going and living, like, what are we going to do after this, right? She had no clue that this was going to kill her. So again, he's protecting her from that. And she, I think there is that level of Ellie knows that he's lying at the end when she says, okay. But it's, to me, I read that as the child just listening to the adult. And you know what? Whatever's going on, I'm going to trust you because I have built this trust with you, and I trust you with my literal life that whatever's happening is happening and you are making the correct decisions. That's why I think there's hesitation from her, because she's thinking about it. She knows he's lying. However, I think she fully trusts him, and that's how we're going to go into. I think there's going to be something early in season two. Maybe it's episode one, maybe it's episode two, but I think there'll be something pretty quick that breaks that trust. And that's going to be an explosive moment. I don't think there's going to be anything bubbling under the, maybe there'll be something bubbling, right? But I think it's going to be boom, something happens, and all of a sudden the trust is gone. But man, was it, it's just powerful. It's just such a powerful final couple minutes of this episode. And just the fact that me and you can take, I mean, pretty almost alternate takes to this, just talks to, it speaks to the creativity and the storytelling that they were able to do with the show.
I think she trusts him, but I don't believe anymore that she fully trusts him. And I think that's what we saw at the end there. Cause like,
but why wouldn't she at that point? Like, why? I just don't, I can understand what you're thinking, but like, from a contextual standpoint, there's nothing to her that would say, maybe I shouldn't trust this guy about what he's saying right now, because she got knocked out. They both got knocked out. He woke up being told that she's going to die in the surgery. She woke up in the car. Like, I just don't think there's anything. Again, I think that there's a little bit of doubt in what he says, but I just don't see a reason for her to fully distrust him.
And I'm not saying fully distrust. It's just sure. That like she can tell that he's lying about something. She doesn't know what that something is. And now it's interesting too that Ellie is Joel's purpose in life now at this point. But her purpose has now been taken away. The fact that she was the one that you know, they're like, we need you because you have in you what could be the ultimate cure. And the fact that she wakes up and it's like, yep, that didn't happen. All those people are dead now. It's not going to happen for you, but there could be others. So she believes there could be others. But ultimately, yep. Like, that's part of the lie too. But she doesn't know that. She knows that he's lying about something. And I think that's where she may trust him, but I don't like there's it's not going to be this full blind trust that she's had up to this point. And I agree with you where I think something big is going to happen within that first episode or two of season two. That's going to take what's now still trust that's there, but a little shaky, and completely shatter it.
Although they did say that they're going to take The Last of Us Part Two and turn it into, I believe they said two seasons, if I remember correctly. So maybe they'll stretch that out to two or three episodes. However,
they said multiple seasons. They haven't said specifically two, so it could be more.
I wouldn't want it to go any longer than two more seasons.
I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
But you also got to think of the business side of things too.
Mm, yeah.
And not to get into too spoilery of spoilers, but there are certain people, places, and things that were important to this season that I feel like it's Baby Yoda all over. If you've listened to this podcast, you'll know our discussions on Baby Yoda. I'll just leave it at that.
I pick up what we're gonna talk after we end the recording here, because I think I pick it up where you put. Anyway, what was I saying? I don't like. I understand now in her head, right? You are completely right. In her head, her purpose is gone. However, I don't think it's actually gone. That's where I do think Joel messed up a little bit, where I think he could have told some sort of a different lie, whereas the doctor couldn't quite pinpoint it. We have to find a new doctor. I think he wants more research to be done and more tests, non-lethal tests to be done on Ellie before they just up and do the surgery, you know?
Because he's been on this road throughout this whole first season of like fuck humanity. Like, I don't care about humanity. Like, everybody is like awful, terrible people in this awful, terrible world.
Literally burned now, in the second episode.
Now, with Ellie, I think his whole intent to tell her that, you know, it didn't work with you. It could work with others, but it didn't work with you. I think that's his way to be like, we're going to live in my brother's town. I'm going to raise sheep, and we're going to be together in a safe place. And that's going to be our purpose, is to just live our lives safely. I think he's being very selfish and doing what's best for him in this whole last episode.
Yes.
I think that's why he said that it wouldn't work for her anymore, because I don't think he wants to go out on a pointless mission to find other doctors or other people that could maybe get it out of her. His main mission right now is to keep her safe.
I think
better way to do that than in his brother's town up in the mountains where, my theory too is why we didn't see so many zombies throughout like the second half of the season is because we were in like cold, cold, cold climates where I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of zombies that are going to be able to live in that kind of conditions. So let's stay in my brother's town where it's safe. Now I have my brother, my family. My main objective throughout the first half of this whole season. And now I have you, the new addition to my family. And he said a couple times in those last couple episodes, he just wants to raise sheep. He just wants to be a shepherd. Yeah. So I think that's his main intention is we're going to stay in this town together as a family, and I'm going to raise my sheep.
Maybe this is the optimistic side of me and the sappy part of me, but I still believe that there is a part of Joel who wants Ellie's dream to also come true, but not at the expense of her own life. I don't think he's ever going to tell, I shouldn't say ever. I don't think he's going to tell her right away that he is looking for, or potentially has someone else looking for, another doctor or someone else who can do tests on her. Again, non-lethal test. I think if he was ever presented with the choice of a non-lethal, like, we're going to do some tests on her and see what we can figure out, how we can make this cure before we fucking kill her. I don't think he would snap on that in a heartbeat. So
no, yes. But I don't think he trusts, like, he doesn't trust people to begin with.
Fair.
And now the fact that, like, this whole time they were like, we're going to go to the Fireflies and they're going to be able to get this out of you and we'll be able to go on our way, like, afterwards, like, that trust is completely gone. And I don't think he's going to trust anybody to tamper with her or poke or prod her or anything anymore at this point. And I also want to say, too, I don't think he's going to tell her, but I think she's going to find out. And I think she's going to find out because I think it's very important to know that Joel killed everybody except for the two nurses that were in the operating room.
And there was a civilian running away that he did not shoot, who obviously got out of the building.
Oh, I don't even remember that part.
If you rewatch that scene, there is a moment where someone is clearly running out of the building away from Joel down a hallway, and he does not even take a shot.
Hmm.
Now, there are theories. Again, I won't spoil anything from season two, but there are theories that that person is related to another person. That's all I'm going to say, and people will understand if they know. Now, what I was going to say before, speaking of trust and broken trust, who else knows about Ellie and her condition and what Joel's mission was?
His brother.
Tommy. There's going to be something major with Tommy and Joel. There has to be. What happens when Joel comes back with Ellie and says, sorry, we didn't do what we were supposed to do there, where there's no cure. I didn't want them to kill her. Joel, I feel like, and especially because Joel, of course, is going to tell Tommy, well, I fucking murdered all of them too. Like, there's going to be Tommy's, I don't know. Maybe Tommy won't.
Well, not only that.
Maybe Tommy won't let him live there. Like, who knows what's going to happen with him?
Not only that, but if you remember too, when they get to the town finally, Joel's like, yeah, I can't do this anymore. Like, Tommy, you have to take her. I don't care that your wife's pregnant. I don't care that you're happy and safe and healthy here. You got to now do my mission. Yeah, and exactly. That already started to cause some troubles and disagreements. And so the fact that, like you said, he comes back with her and he's like, yep, sorry, didn't work out. And his brother's like, you were going to make me do that?
Yeah, exactly. Imagine the flip side of that then. Tommy comes back to the village and goes, yeah, they had to kill her. Sorry. Joel probably kills him on sight. Anyway, the other part of that is, like, I honestly think maybe Tommy's the one who, maybe Tommy tells his wife and his wife ends up telling Ellie. Like, that's the chain of, because she already told Ellie a lot of, not secrets, but, like, things that she didn't know about Joel. This show is so good. I'm just so excited. Again, we're not spoiling anything from Last of Us 2, because they might change things from Last of Us 2 as well. But there's some exciting things. There's a potential redemption arc followed by something tragic. And the show is just so good because there's so many ways to interpret it. They told a story without it being one dimensional, right? There's just so many, like, me and you are fighting about this. Like there's a clear answer. There isn't.
I wouldn't say that we're fighting. We are.
No, we're fighting.
We are civilly debating.
Correct. That's what we call it. Anyway, I absolutely love this show. I cannot wait for more. But like I said, I also don't want it to go too long. I don't want it to become like a 10-season show.
Yeah, I think 3 seasons is like a sweet spot of like, okay, this is the story we're telling and this is it, like it or not. And that's, I think that would fit the creators' perspectives on things too, because if you know anything about these games, what the creator of the video game is one of the showrunners, and he's pretty much blatantly said that there isn't going to be a third chapter, and that whether you liked part two or not, like, that's the story that he wanted to tell, and that's how it is. And it's fun and exciting and interesting to see him go on board with the upcoming seasons, to then also hear the showrunners, I don't remember which one said it, but that there are going to be significant changes from The Last of Us Part Two in the seasons going forward, and that's the parts that they're the most excited about going forward. And any other thoughts, or should we just go from one Pedro to the other?
The last thing I want to talk about is the pacing. Episode by episode is absolutely phenomenal. Like I said, we get a technical flashback in episode one, where we spend more time with Sarah than we do in the video games, which I thought was very impactful for Joel's story. We get a very good establishing episode one, and then we go into a story that really has nothing to do, minus a few things, with the full story in episode three, which is honestly one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen. But it tells a greater story comparing Frank and Bill. There it is.
I was going to say, his name was not Shit.
You're right. It was not. Frank and Bill. Comparing Frank and Bill to Ellie and Joel. That episode's just great, showing different sides of humanity in a crisis like this. It's just almost brings me to tears thinking about it. But then we go back into the action for episode 4, 5, and I think 6. And then four and five. And I believe episode 6 was then the flashback.
I thought it was 7. And then 8 and 9 are the rest of the story.
No, you're right. So 4, 5, and 6 would have been just action, moving the story along. Then episode, and at the end of episode 6, this character might be dying. So let's flashback for a full episode. Just phenomenal pacing, phenomenal storytelling. I can't praise this show enough, and neither can the internet. I mean, it's 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think the audience score is 89. It's got a 9.1 out of 10 on IMDb. Like, everyone loves this. Like, this isn't just something that me and you are nerding out over. This is something that was critically acclaimed, and it could be a turning point for video games. And hopefully in a couple of weeks, Mario does the same thing. But like, and Sonic's already been doing it for fucking 3 years now. But yeah, hopefully this is like a big turning point for video games turning into movies or TV shows, because this was done perfectly, I want to say. And hopefully that leads into more, because there's a lot of phenomenal stories within the worlds of video games.
So now let's jump from one beloved TV show to the other, and that being Mando Season 3, Episode 3, dropped this week. I know you were just talking, Kyle, but I want to shoot it back to you right away. Thoughts on Episode 3 of Mando?
It's weird. It's another Episode 3 that almost has nothing to do with the original story. I don't know how this... It's Pedro Pascal with a special child, and the Episode 3 doesn't connect to the main story. I don't know who's writing all this, but I love that it's connecting like this. I really enjoyed this. The bringing back old characters with shady backgrounds to fulfill a mission, but then there's a twist towards the end. I really liked this, even though, like, as we spent a little bit of time with Din Djarin and Bo-Katan, but really not much. And I think that's okay. I think that, like, again, I've talked about both episodes three now. Episode threes. where when you're telling a story, you don't have to necessarily always focus on the main character, because this just brought out a lot of emotion and a lot of relationship connecting that just kind of draws you in as a viewer and makes you a little bit more invested as these characters will continue to go on. Because obviously one of these characters was, I don't think he's dead, but like he was going for something good. He was trying to kind of turn his life around and help the rebellion, but now he might be turned back to the dark side. I'm not sure, but like, there's obviously one character who had one thing in mind the entire time and was playing him very well. But I, as a viewer, was like believing in this relationship and like very excited for them to almost wrong their rights. Nope, right their wrongs in this galactic war. But then just the emotional turn at the end where she's speaking against him, and then she plays the emotional card where she says, I want to stay back. He's a close friend. You know, he may have relapsed, but he's still a friend. And then they leave and she just fucking cranks the dial on it. Like, oh, it's honestly heartbreaking. There's a lot of this episode that I need to rewatch because I missed a lot of details early on, but I still got the gist of the story and just how emotional just a single episode can be. It's just awesome. When television is done right, it's just phenomenal. But then we also got a couple of cool things with Din Djarin and Bo-Katan, like I mentioned, which I'll let you talk about, and then I'll give a couple 2 cents before I wrap up.
Sounds good, because I don't know, man. This season hasn't been grabbing me as much as 1 and 2. And it's weird to say, because I loved Andor. And this episode very much took a page out of Andor's storytelling book. But it did not work for me. I loved how this episode started, how we're back in the minds of Mandalore with Bo-Katan and with Din and with Grogu. And they get out of the mines, they go back to Bo's ship, they're flying back to her place when they run into Imperial interceptors. And then we get this awesome space battle on the planet, which was awesome to see all of these fighters like weaving through all these mountains and canyons and hills, something that any other Star Wars show we would have seen up in space, where maybe there's asteroids in the way, but otherwise there's not really a whole lot of obstacles and there's not a whole lot of maneuvering or danger that could be taking place with this. But instead, we get the on-the-planet battle with Din and Bo. And my favorite part of that whole battle was with Bo-Katan and her ship, which, again, I've said time and time again, I have not watched any of Clone Wars with Bo-Katan in. So this ship in this show is the first time I'm seeing this ship. And Bo-Katan, my relationship with that character is only through Mandalorian. But I'm falling in love with her ship almost as much as I was falling in love with the Razor Crest. And there's this key move that she does where she's the interceptors are behind her. There's like one left, and Din can't take it out, and she's got to do it herself. And she lowers one of her wings and whips around and shoots at it. Oh my gosh, I fucking loved that. That was my favorite part of this whole episode. Then they're going back to Bo's place, and all of a sudden on Din's radar, there's a bunch of little dots that pop up, and there are a fuck ton of them. They're like, oh shit, we can't take them out. What do? They bomb Bo's palace. And he's like, it's all right. Like, I know a place that we can go. Here are the coordinates. Let's jump into hyperspace. Boom. They take off. And I was in that first like 20 minutes of this episode. I was like, this is what I was here for this show for. And then we jump to Dr. Pershing, I think his name was. A character that I gave zero fucks about in seasons 1 and 2. I understood that he had a role in those seasons. It was not a significant role at all. Like, it was pretty much like, you're here for this sole purpose, and now that this purpose is done, get the fuck off the screen. Sometimes you have those kinds of characters. I was not prepared for doing an Andor type episode with him, especially after that awesome battle that we had with Din and Bo. Like, I don't know. The things that people say about Andor, like, I was feeling with this episode. I was like, this is slow. This is boring. Why do I give a shit about this guy? I don't care. What are we doing here? And granted, I understood the plot of and where they were going, point A, B, C, D. But at the same time, I was like, what does this have anything to do with the Mandalorian, with Din and Grogu and Bo and the Mandalore and all that stuff? And basically, it was an hour's worth of episode that was just like, this girl right here, she's bad. And that was all that we really found out about this whole episode. I don't think he's dead, but he's definitely brain dead, because he even makes the comment about this being like a mind flayer, and that it's gonna like wipe his mind. You're gonna erase my memories. And they're like, oh, it's okay. No, don't worry. Like, this isn't the same kind of machine. Like, all it's going to do is it's going to give you some bright lights and happy colors and put you in a better mood and get you back to loving the New Republic. And then, like you said, she cranks that dial. He's brain dead, or his memories are gone. And it was basically just like, oh, We built this episode up so you'd like this character that you maybe seen once or twice in seasons one and two. And now you just got to know that she's going to be a big threat going forward. And then we go back to Din and Bo, and they go back to the Mandalorians, and he's like, hey, like, I bathed in the waters. Like, here's a sample. Like, so, you know, I'm not lying. Like, we're serious. And he tells Bo, like, leave your helmet on before we get there. Like, if you haven't taken it off yet, leave it on, because you don't have a home anymore. You don't have any followers anymore. You have nobody except for me and these people. Like, you may not agree with what they're saying, but you're at least going to have a place to stay for a while. So she's now redeemed too. And now she's a part of the clan with them. That's where the episode ends. And I was like, when we got back to them, I was like, oh, good. We're back to what I was invested in the first place with this episode. And was it nice to see Coruscant again? Sure. Was it nice to see an accurately populated Coruscant and not just vacant buildings and no speeders flying around in the background while a couple of Jedi are fighting during a flashback scene? Yeah, that was great. Was it cool to see the quote-unquote highest peak of Coruscant, and that this is like the only part of the planet's land that's now visible and left? Was that cool? Yes. But otherwise, that was about it. And I was so-so on episode one. I was more invested in episode two. In episode three, I was invested for like a fourth of it. So far, it bums me out, because at seasons one and two of Mandalorian were so strong. Season two, I think, was even better than season one. And now I feel like we're just like we've taken a step back. And for as much love as I have for the show, it bums me out that I feel this way. Kyle, I'm going to let you talk now, because you're shaking your head angrily at me like this whole time I'm talking. I'm just expressing of how I'm feeling. I do not like disliking these things. You get so mad at me when I dislike some Star Wars shows or some Marvel shows. I don't go out of my way to be like, it is my mission to hate this thing, to dislike this thing. I'm not going into new episodes of Mandalorian being like, I'm not going to like this. And then it's done and I'm like, see, I told you I didn't like this. I'm not that guy. I don't know. It's just not grabbing me the way that the first two seasons were. And now that we're three episodes in, I'm getting worried.
Brian, this podcast would be boring if me and you just casually talked about this, right? No, I have to get angry at you, Brian. I'm just saying, let it play out, because I don't think this is just establishing her as evil and, you know, oh, this guy's good, but now he's not. Like, I think she is now going to be the baddie. I don't know. I don't know if she's the main baddie of the season, whatever, but maybe. I don't know what she's going to do, potentially.
I think she's still working with Moff Gideon, because they also said that he escaped. Like, he's no longer under custody. Like, that was the other, like, important key thing that I got out of this episode was
exactly
they've established that they no longer have him. So he's out there, and we know how pissed he was at the end of season two. And we know that she worked with him on on his ship in season two.
Which makes her so dangerous, because she knew that, A, they needed whatever the fuck they stole from that ship. I honestly don't know what it was. But she also knows that they need the scientist back. They need Dr. Pershing back. So I believe that that was her plan the entire time, was to fucking fry his brain or potentially just wipe a lot of his memories so that he was back in the thinking of, oh, I'm just part of Moff Gideon's crew. Now, I also believe, as an optimist and a person who likes a redemption arc, that he at one point is going to snap into it, snap out of it type of thing, where he'll make the right decision in a crucial moment. I think that'll be a cool moment. It's not going to be huge. I don't think it's going to be the best part of the season by any means, but I think this story was necessary. And I have no absolute, I have no proof of that, right? I have no reason to think, other than I trust this show and the people who make this show. I say that because Boba Fett, I trust this show and the story that they tell for it to make sense by the end, right? There's probably things, if you go back in season one and season two, there's probably things that we were maybe complaining about. I don't think we were ever like, oh, I don't like this episode like you are right now, potentially. However, I'm sure that there are things that if we go back now, they'd probably make a lot more sense. I just think that there was a reason that they did this in the third episode, right? I don't feel the same disappointment that you do for these first three episodes. The first two I really enjoyed. This episode, like I said, I thought this was a really cool third episode. I feel like the third episode is a very good time to get away from the main story and tell something else if you potentially want to, especially if you're only eight episodes in a season. And I like you mentioned also, I think that there was enough Din Djarin and Bo-Katan to satisfy. I agree that we want more. That's the whole reason we're watching the show, right? I get it. However, jaw-dropping moment when they're fucking bombing the building that Bo-Katan was staying, and I was like, holy shit. Now she, again, I'm steadfast on my prediction that she's just going to fall back into the old ways of everything happening, because now she's redeemed. She's got to keep her helmet on. She's back with the armor. I'm just saying, it's all lining up. Not necessarily the way that Bo-Katan is planning on it, but it's all just going to fall into place. And Din Djarin eventually is going to somehow end up on the opposite way. I think this is all going to play out. We just need to let it.
I don't know. I am for the first time nervous. because I would agree with you about, you know, some episodes hit or miss, like in seasons one and two. If I hadn't have just binged through and rewatched all of season one and all of season two, and then those three episodes of Book of Boba Fett, like, those are all very prevalent in my brain. What happened with Book of Boba Fett is like the first red flag, because all of those episodes were written by Jon Favreau, the creator and showrunner of The Mandalorian. The fact that they had those crucial episodes of Mandalorian like wedged in Book of Boba Fett is another kind of red flag. And then just how But this has been playing out so far. What, like these first three episodes. And I would agree with you with most other shows that episode three can be an appropriate place to kind of sidestep to a different story for a little bit away from the main story of what's going on. But I think there's still so much that's not known and not fully developed yet of where we're going in this season that it felt jarring to be like, all right, we're going to step away from our main characters for the majority of this episode to tell this side story that might be relevant later on in the season. But for right now, you're just like, oh, well, that was a interesting way to spend 45 minutes of an episode away from our main character and our main storyline when I still don't know what the main like goals and purposes of our characters are going to be going forward. Like, yes, Din is now redeemed and now like his people like accept him again. And now they know that they can go back to Mandalore, and that's probably going to be his main purpose now, is to get his people back to their home planet, back home, and establish things there. And now Bo-Katan's with them, and I'm sure she's got her hidden agendas that she's not revealing yet. But, like, where are we going? Like, by episode three of The Last of Us, I kind of knew, like, all right, this is kind of, like, where we're going with our characters. Like, their main goals and missions for this season, like, is drawn out to where, like, I kind of have an idea of where we're going. But right now, I'm like, where are we going? What are we doing? Why are we with the side character that I still give zero fucks about? Like, I did not care that he was getting his mind wiped at the end. I was like, yeah, I spent, like, 45 minutes with you. Yeah, I still really didn't care about you or your story. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And that's where we're sitting for a week until we get another new episode on Wednesday. So I'm not trying to be a downer. I'm really not. I have concerns because I love this show so much. Din and the Mandalorian and his ship, the Razor Crest, not the new one, which the new one's slowly starting to win me over, but I'm still Razor Crest at heart. But these things are like some of my favorite Star Wars, and it's not recency bias. Like, it is. Like, I love this character. I love this storytelling. I love the story that we're telling. And now in season three, when I'm not loving it to the level that I was in the past, that's where I get a little nervous and concerned and a little worried. And that's kind of where I'm at right now at week three. By week eight, I hope that it's a totally different story where I'm like, this season was awesome. I wasn't quite sure where we were going, but once we figured it out and once things were a little bit more clear, I love the direction that we were going in, and I love the direction that the show is going in. The season was awesome. The show is still awesome, and I can't wait for more in season four. But I'm not at that point right now. I'm at the, I don't quite know what we're doing and where we're going, and I don't know if I love what we've been doing so far, and I'm nervous of how we're going to get to where I'll feel better again.
I'm going to wrap up my thoughts by just simply stating we just got done talking about a show that we both very much enjoyed, the critics very much enjoyed, where the first episode was very much a flashback establishing characters. The second episode was slightly establishing present day, more so characters, more so slight story. The third episode had fucking nothing to do with the main characters. And then we get right back into it, and we're basically fully in episode four and on. I'm just going to throw that out there. I get your worries based on how you're feeling. It's also episode three of an eight episode series. Season, I should say. I think again, I've been talking a lot about Din Djarin and Bo-Katan eventually feuding. I feel like those seeds have been planted several times within the first two episodes, and even a little bit in this episode for the few time or for the little time that we got with them. So I believe that they have, again, in my book, I think we'll look back at this after episode 8 and we'll say they did a good job setting up the story in those first two episodes, and we got back to it in episode 4. I'm holding out hope.
I hope so. But I feel like by episode eight, I won't have been like they did a good job establishing. I'll probably be on the line of like, oh, they finally course corrected in episode 4 and gave us a satisfying like 3/4 of a season.
I'll convince you by the end.
Challenge accepted. And with that, before we wrap up this episode of the Midwestern Nerds TV Talk Edition, we need to jump into one of our favorite segments on this podcast, the best stuff recommendations of the week. I've got a handful of recommendations. First, it's a soft rec, but I still consider it to be a recommendation. Last week, I recommended Screams 4 and 5. My soft rec for this week is Scream 6. I liked it. I didn't love it. I don't think I liked it as much as 5. There are some good things in it. Ghostface in this movie is a lot darker and more brutal. I love that we're in a different location in New York, and we can do different things in this series that we could in past movies. I like that Hayden Panettiere returns from Scream 4 and 6 now as Kirby, and I like the role that they gave her. I liked what they did with Gail Weathers, Courtney Cox's character in this movie. She didn't have a giant role in this movie, but I felt like her contributions to this movie were really awesome. There are some things that and the last good thing that I want to say is the way that this movie starts. Like, every Scream movie starts with a kill by Ghostface, and they did something different in this movie that they haven't done yet before, and it was a nice little twist of what you would usually expect going into these movies, and made it a little bit more exciting to then jump into the rest of the movie to see what was in store. There are some things that I didn't quite like about this movie. There are certain characters that clearly should have died and did not, that you think at points they did die, and it was like, oh man, like that sucks. Like, I kind of wish that character would have made it. And then like magically at the end, like they're still alive and they're like, we're still here. We're still kicking. We're good. And it's like, what? That was probably the biggest disappointment of this movie. It was just that like some things like that were unexpected and earned, then completely those stakes got taken away when we just conveniently and magically brought those characters back because they're characters that the franchise wants you to love and follow moving forward. I liked this movie. I didn't love this movie. If you're a fan of the franchise, I would recommend going out and seeing it. It's fun. I didn't walk out of the movie mad, but it was good. It could have been better. Sydney isn't in this movie. It's like the first Scream movie that she's not in, and you definitely felt her absence. But I will say the movie did a good job of explaining why she wasn't there. It was definitely believable, and it was like, I could see like this makes sense for the character of why she wasn't here this time around. So that is my first soft recommendation. My next recommendation is There's a little movie coming out this week. I'm actually going to be seeing it tonight, the night that we're recording this episode. Shazam! Fury of the Gods comes out this week. And my main recommendation is going to be the first Shazam movie. I know a lot of people are very hit and miss on DC movies. There are a lot of people that are checked out on DC movies, especially the old regime of DC movies. The first Shazam movie is one of my favorite DC movies that's not a Batman movie. I really loved the first movie. I rewatched it again last night preparing for the second Shazam movie. It's a good movie. It's the first DCEU movie that felt fun to me. That felt like it was, you know, trying to have a little bit of joy, trying to have a little bit of fun to it. I like that it's an adult, but not an adult superhero. And if you've seen the movie, you'll get what I'm saying when I say that. And I like the fun hijinks that we can do with that kind of a character. And I like the extension of this character now being a team of characters and not just one character. And I'm excited to see where we go forward in the next Shazam movie that I'll be seeing tonight, that hopefully will be my best stop for next week. So the first Shazam movie, if you like your Marvel movies, if you like superhero movies, and you haven't seen Shazam because you're like, ah, those DC movies are just not that good, give Shazam a chance. I don't think you'll be disappointed. I think that you'll actually really enjoy it. I think more people need to watch that movie, because from what I know about the first movie and my love for it and what I've heard about the second movie, a lot of people who've seen the second movie think that it's better than the first, which is great to hear. But at the same time, I don't think anybody's going to see this movie. The projections, the box office projections going into its first weekend are not great. I bought my tickets late the night before, so late Thursday night, for a 9 o'clock showing. And I get that Friday's St. Patrick's Day, so that's probably a part of it. But at the same time, for a 9 o'clock movie in the super screen, as of 6 o'clock Friday night, there are two other people that are in, that have got their tickets for the 9 o'clock showing besides my girlfriend and I. It's not good. Not looking good. The fact too that like this movie came out with like two mediocre trailers, in my opinion, and there's been absolutely no marketing besides that. Like, it kind of feels like Warner Brothers is kind of burying this movie. It doesn't look good. And that's kind of a bummer. And I hope that I can come back next week and be like, no, you all need to go and see this movie because it's that good. I hope that's the case. But if it's a stinker, at least the first one is great. And it could be a standalone movie. Did we need a second one? No. Like, you could definitely go into Shazam and watch that first movie and be like, that was a great movie. And nothing happened with that character ever again since that movie. That could be your headcanon. You could go and live on your merry life and not feel any consequence. But definitely go out and check out Shazam. It's a great movie.
All right, everyone. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it every couple months just because I feel like it needs to be said. If you've ever thought about, if you ever have liked or you ever thought about liking professional wrestling, now's the time to get into it. I'm going to say it every single time that I get an opportunity to. All Elite Wrestling, AEW, their main show is on Wednesdays, AEW Dynamite. It's on TBS, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. You just watch it. It's just so much fun. It's just good television. There's good storytelling. It's good wrestling. You know, like I said, if you're a fan of wrestling, you're going to enjoy it. But even if you've ever had a liking in it, you know, people like Chris Jericho, Jeff Jarrett, Sting. There's people that you'll recognize. But then there's also these really cool young, I don't want to call them kids because they're my age, but there's these really cool young wrestlers. Right now, MJF is their top champion. He's only 24 years old, and he's honestly one of the greatest things in the history of professional wrestling. And there's this guy called Darby Allin who's with Sting. There's fucking Jungle Boy, who's the son of Jack Perry.
What about the dude that's in his underwear behind you under the basketball hoop?
That's Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode used to be in TNA. Now he's in WWE. He's not in AEW, but he's also glorious. You'll get the reference if you know. AEW's great right now. Even WWE, honestly, right now has been, from what I hear, I don't watch it that often, but from what I hear, it's WrestleMania season, so this is the good time of year if you want to get into it. Start watching it. WrestleMania is the weekend of the 1st and the 2nd of April. It's pro wrestling, I think, is just one of those underrated categories of entertainment that people just don't give a chance to. And I can never stress enough when I talk to people, just give it a chance. Go into it knowing that it's not UFC. It's not actual high school wrestling, and you'll enjoy it. Like, you, anyone, I can guarantee you, because the first question that I get when I tell people I watch professional wrestling is, you know it's fake, right? And I want to fucking punch him in the face whenever they say that, because yes, I know it's fake. Everyone who watches it knows it's fake. That's not the reason. We're not watching it because we watch it for the entertainment and the story. It's the same reason that I, as a nerd, watch The Mandalorian or The Last of Us or any of these fucking Marvel movies that we, you know, that's not real, right? You know, that's just scripted and people acting. It's the same fucking thing, okay? People just have never been able to wrap their heads around that for some odd reason. I am here to continuously tell the public that professional wrestling is awesome and you should give it a try.
You know it's not real, right?
If it didn't mess up the recording, I would hang up on you right now.
Just boot me out of the call. I've actually been hearing a lot of good things about professional wrestling lately. I've been hearing that AEW is good. I've been hearing that WWE has actually gotten a lot better recently. I've been hearing a lot of people talk about WrestleMania coming up this weekend. And I've also heard that if you know, then you know when I say this, that the Bloodline storyline is one of the best, like, WWE storylines ever told.
Yes, and that's Brian. Going
on, and that's going on right now. So I'm a little bit in the know. I'm a little bit in the know. I've got some nerdy podcasts that talk about all the things that we talk about. And they also talk about UFC and WWE and AEW occasionally. So I'm a little bit in the know. I'll share. I'll brag a little bit with my Bloodline knowledge here. Some good stuff. I currently don't watch it. I don't get TBS or any of that stuff. I know occasionally it's on Fox, like randomly during the week. I think there was like
WWE SmackDown is on Fox Friday nights.
Yeah, and I occasionally, when I turn on my TV and like the antenna decides to work without me moving it, and it's still on Fox because of football, and all of a sudden, oh, I'm like, oh, wrestling's on. Well, let's see what's going on for like 10 or 15 minutes before I turn on whatever I was going to turn on. But yeah, check it out if you're into the stuff. If you're not, like Kyle said, give it a chance. Who knows? Maybe one of these times I'll actually make it down to Milwaukee to visit my co-host, and he'll be like, hey, it's wrestling night. We got to watch this instead of rewatching that Marvel movie for the 30th time. And maybe I'll get hooked. Who knows?
Hey, April, I think it's April 12th on a Wednesday. AEW Dynamite's going to be at the Panther Arena. Guess it'll be there.
There you go. Maybe you'll be able to bring back some good and exciting stories.
I was on TV last time I was on Dynamite. I'll show you pictures later.
Oh, nice. Nice. All right. We have been your Midwesterners. That's MIDWESTERNERDS. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Midwesternerds. We are the Midwesternerds podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send that to midwesternerds@gmail.com. You can find and stream and listen to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please remember to rate and review, share and subscribe, be kind, please rewind. All of these things help this podcast to continue to improve and grow and be the Midwesternerds podcast that you, the listener, want to listen to. Next week, I know I said that it was going to be this week, but I promise it will be next week. We will be celebrating our 100th episode. 100 episodes in the book. 100 regular Midwestern Nerds episodes will be in the book as of next week. And to celebrate, Kyle and I will be breaking down and ranking our top 100 superhero comic book movies of all time. Are there 100 that we can actually rank? We'll let you know next week. But until then, for your Midwestern Nerds, I have been Brian Stoffel.
And I've been K.O. Kyle Wilson.
And whether it's beer, brats, comics, cordyceps, baby Yodas, Mandalorians, doctors that take up more episode time than Mandalorians or
my fucking cat.
Brother.
Keep it nerdy.